Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. This is the time right now.
Right now?
If you're out there listening and you're about to board a megabus, if you're about to climb onto a 747, if you're running to catch that last Amtrak train out of the city and back home,
if you're about to ski down that mountain,
yes, to all of our Nordic listeners,
if you're about to get back on that ski lift, go up the mountain, then slide back down.
Listen, guys, if you are traveling anywhere, now is the time to download not just this episode right here, but all of the prior episodes that we have done in this 12 days of podcasts.
Clear out everything on your phone. Delete all your pictures. Delete all your apps. Delete your text messages. Delete your text message app.
Now is the time. Now is the time to download that Guapdad 4000 episode, that Kodak Black episode, that Denzel Curry episode, the two Jews and two Black Dudes episodes, the Amina 2 episode, the Kazim episode, the Josh Dick episode, the Dream episode.
And we got two more coming up, so make room. Delete your grandma's last voicemails.
Delete your ebook copy, Jeff, of Sola Costa, The Diary of Me.
Isn't that the R. Kelly book?
By Robert Kelly. Delete it from your phone right now.
Yeah, I mean, you should be doing that anyway.
Make all the room for all the episodes. A Waste of Time with It's the Real, 12 days of podcasts. We have a couple left, but make sure you've gotten all those for your journeys. Jeff, today on the podcast.
Today on the podcast, we have one of the best behind the scenes people that we know from the industry, and people love behind the scenes industry type stories. So here we go with Emmanuel Cuny Panicker.
Yeah, the new SVP of video over at Capitol Music Group. And Jeff, we caught her in the nick of time. She was moving to the West Coast the next day after basically 13 years at Atlantic Records, before that Rockefeller Records. It's a very inspiring story, someone from very humble circumstances on the Lower East Side to eventually working with people like Jay-Z, Bun B, Kanye West,
Killer Mike, T.I.,
Beanie Siegel, and everybody you know, and never switching up, always remaining humble and hardworking. Manny is the best. And I think you guys are really going to love this story. Jeff, when do you want to get into it?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Pull Up and Spray, a.k.a. Sprinkler System.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Say Less, a.k.a. Helen Keller.
Seeing it in person is
the You have to introduce yourself. Yeah.
I'm Emmanuel Cuny. I'm also E and Jeff's friend.
Yeah. And this is your third favorite podcast to waste time with. It's the real. Bra ra 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 ra. Manny, what's happening?
Hi.
Hey, we're so happy that you're here.
And
we caught you before you're making a cross-country move, which is a big deal.
The big move is in 2 days.
But yeah, that's a lot, Manny. Like packing, boxing it, like deciding, like, you know, everything.
Life changes.
Life changes.
It's another part of the journey.
But congratulations on that. You. That's a big deal. But
I'm super excited.
You should be.
But right now, it's just like all the pieces and actually dealing with the logistics. I haven't gotten a chance to really absorb.
Right. Let's start at the very beginning. Where are you originally from?
I grew up in Lower East Side on Cherry Street.
Okay. Whoa, all
right by the Brooklyn Bridge.
You and are the second most famous person besides True Life.
Yeah.
Who we just had on the podcast.
You did?
Yeah, we did. Aww. Yeah. What was it like growing up on the Lower East Side?
So Lower East Side when I was growing up is way different than it is now. These high rises that are there now, like there weren't any. There were a lot of like abandoned lots. There were a lot of squatters.
A-Life wasn't there.
No. It was a very different, colorful time.
Yeah, rough and tumble.
Yeah, my mom had gotten us an apartment in the first Section 8 building in New York City when I was a baby. And that's on Cherry Street.
Mm-hmm.
So it was affordable housing for her. She was a single mom. And
was it just you two?
It was just us two for a while. And then she started taking care of my dad's other child from his marriage.
And were you finding a lot of like friends within your building?
I had one or two friends. My mom would take me out a lot, but like a lot out of the neighborhood. Like she believed in going to museums every weekend, going to fairs, going to the library. So I was one of those kids that would go to school, come home, do my homework. But then on the weekends, she would take me out a lot. Like I didn't really hang out on my block probably till I was like a preteen, a little older, where she like something shifted. I'm not sure what, but she was like, go downstairs. And I'm like, what do you mean? like, go downstairs and you can come back up in an hour or two. And I remember the first time I was like, what? And from that point on, and I was probably around 10 or 11, like, I did hang out on the block and had my friends, Lamira. There was another girl named Maria. At that time, Lower East Side in our building was predominantly, like, Blacks, Hispanics, Puerto Ricans and Dominicans specifically, and Chinese. Mm-hmm. And there were about, like, I can remember maybe three white people, including my mom, in the building.
And then, like, what kind of shops were, like, around you?
I distinctly remember when they built the Pathmark, because it was, like, in an abandoned lot. And other than that, there was Pathmark in our building. Eventually, there became a Stop One, which was, like, the building bodega.
Yep.
When you walked to the train station, there was a pizzeria, a liquor store, another bodega. If you wanted, like, sneakers and, like, Coach, you had to go to Delancey, like, where Hyperactive was, or Orchard Street, like, had leather coats, sheepskins when sheepskins were in style.
Yeah. Where was your elementary school?
So my first elementary school was St. Stanislaus, and it was on 9th Street in Alphabet City, and it was a Catholic school.
Were you very religious?
My mom was Catholic. Well, my mom is Catholic. Mm-hmm. She's not dead. Yeah. My mom is Catholic. My father is Hindu. My mom didn't force me to pick a religion. She just wanted me to figure it out on my own when I got older. I was baptized when I was born as a Hindu. Like, I had the puja ceremony and everything. Mm-hmm. But we didn't practice any specific thing at home. And I wasn't, like, forced. I would go to the temple with my father. Sometimes I would go to church with my mom. When I went to church with my school, I didn't have to go. I didn't have to do my first communion. I didn't have to go do confessions. Thank God. That was, like, the most scary thing to me. Like, growing up, like, why do you have to go tell the priest your sins? No. But I went to elementary school there from first grade to third grade. And then in fourth grade, she put me in this other Catholic school on 17th Street. Right by the Spotify offices, called St. Francis Xavier. And from there, I went. My mom was having money issues because she was a single mom and struggling. And from there, I ended up in a French school called Lycée Kennedy, where she managed to get me a full scholarship from the French embassy for the consulate for the next 6, 7, 8, 9. Because I ended up skipping a grade by accident.
By accident?
Yeah. 11, like, for the next 6 years. So she got me a full scholarship there, where my mom only had to, at that point, pay for my books, my uniform, food, and, like, if Holy she needed cow. Me to do after school or, like, extra things. But the French consulate paid for the rest, because she's French. She was a single mom. I keep on saying single mom. Yeah. I don't know why. And I have double nationality. Mm-hmm. So when I left Lycée Kennedy, I was able to leave with a French high school diploma and an American one, and I had the option to go to French university if I wanted to pursue that.
Did you want to go to a French university or no?
No, because, like, at a young age, I felt that college was, like, a delay onto the job market. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to end up having, we had money issues. So my mom, like, couldn't even really afford to do the different applications for the colleges. So I remember being in, like, my last years of high school and saying, well, if I just do the City University application, which is $50, she's not going to be stressed out about me trying to go to a Harvard, a Yale, and having to cough up $100 for each. Right. And at the time, the French school I was in didn't really have the resources to be able to say, hey, there's a way around that. You can do this, you can do that, because all the kids were able to afford it. I was, like, one of the few children that was on a scholarship whose mom literally was having a problem getting the $50.
Wow.
And so when college came around, it was like, okay, if I do the City University application, Baruch could be my first choice. Even if I don't get there, they'll put me into Hunter, which is my second choice, or the third one, and at least she's not shit out of luck.
Yeah. When was the earliest you started taking the train on your own?
I was about, I want to say, 11 or 12 years old.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Where would you go?
I would go from East Broadway, where I grew up, on the F train to school.
By yourself?
Yeah. The F train to 42nd Street, stay at the front of the train to get off, like, at the exit closer to 43rd Street, cross through the buildings to go to 44th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue.
Man. So did you enjoy high school?
High school was really tough, but in retrospect now, I'm so grateful for it. It was tough because I was an American kid from the Lower East Side. I get put in this French school, and everything is taught in French. English is taught as a second language. I didn't really know French when I got there. I'd gotten, like, a couple of, like, entry-level classes that my mom put me in, like, over that summer, but I didn't know French fluently. So I'm the only kid in the class of maybe 10 or 15 of us, don't speak French. I'm super duper tall and skinny, so I'm this height, maybe an inch or two shorter, 5 foot five or six at 10 or 11, and weigh like 80 or 90 pounds, and I'm French and Indian, and most of these children are Haitian, from Senegal, from French-speaking countries in Africa. So there's Senegalese people, there's Ivory people from Ivory Coast, and here comes this Indian girl with two braids and braces, doesn't speak French, didn't really know how to do the math that they were already doing because it was a little more advanced. And it was a very rigorous schedule. Like, we had like class from 8 a.m. till 3 p.m. every day. And it was a half an hour for lunch. And then every night you had 3 to 4 hours of homework. Because it was so small, you couldn't really like get by. You either knew your stuff or you didn't. So I remember in the first week I was there in sixth grade, or was it really seventh grade? But we thought it was sixth grade. And these kids knew how to do division with the, in English, is it decimal point?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or yeah. In French, it's a comma instead of the decimal point.
Yeah.
I only knew how to do it with the remainders. So once again, I looked like a dummy. So by the second or third week in that school, they had to put me with the child, like with the third graders, to learn French, like the grammatical parts of it and everything else.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and I would just come back to my class for the hour or two a day of French, English, and math. And so my first year was like that.
Holy cow.
So then I would like look like the super slow kid that's going with the little kids, the third graders, and then coming back. And I was the only kid in class that I remember that was like not black or white. And at the time, like, now there are mixed kids everywhere. Yeah. At the time, like already in American school, they were like, that's not your real mom. Oh, and I'm like, why? First grade. I'm like, why? How's that not my real mom? That's my mom. They're like, no, she's white. You're brown. They're like, and she's old. And it was like, what?
Man.
Yeah. So going from like American school to French school, it was like, it was different. But now I'm grateful for it because I feel like it taught me to like be a loner, to be okay with being different. Like it gave me thicker and tougher skin. And then also when I went to American college, the way American college is, like my first 2 or 3 years of college, I was completely bored because in French school, I learned all that stuff in math and everything in 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade.
Yeah.
Like in French school, there's no such thing as multiple choice questions. Like there's no copying stuff from a book and putting quotation marks. No, your French teacher wants to know, what does that mean in your own words? Mm-hmm. And they're going to know whether it's your words or not because they know you.
So what did you feel good about in high school?
My best friend, Patricia.
All right.
And the weekends we'd spend like listening to music. She was the one that like, first played like Redman for me and like all kinds of different hip hop stuff.
What were you listening to before that?
Like my mom would make me go play like classical music on the piano. And then I liked like Madonna, George Michael, Milli Vanilli, New Kids on the Block.
Mm-hmm. Yo, by the way, that Milli Vanilli album hits. It hits so hard. It's so good.
It was so good. And yeah. I used to watch Video Music Box too. And then I met my best friend, Patricia, who was like the sunshine at the end of like a rainy tunnel.
Yeah.
And she took me in and I was probably 10 or 11. Patricia was like 14. Mm-hmm. And she was like the cool older sister I never had that would let me sleep over, that would give me makeovers and like side ponytails, that would brush my hair. She taught me how to dance. I'm still not great, but she tried her best. And Patricia was like everything. Like, that was my dog. Like, yeah. She still is. She's like my best friend, my sister. And especially when other kids, especially older boys, were trying to bully me, like Patricia would come through like Superman, like leave her alone in the hallway. But I'm also great because it was like the French school like just gave me another like experience that was so worldly. Like I carry it with me everywhere and it helps me to relate to a lot of different people.
I just remembered that we were in your high school for a B.O.B. concert. Yeah.
Yes. That was, okay, so that library wasn't our library, but we were allowed to go in that library.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whose library was that?
It was like the building's library. It's like New York Mechanic Society or whatever. But at the time, that was a French school, but it was also a Japanese international school.
So remember, we were talking about the fader and...
And we were in like some small room with this guy that was giving us $2 bills.
Yeah. And they would do all these different shows. Like they had
Earl Sweatshirt at an auto mechanic. They had Travis Scott in a bank on Lower East Side.
Yeah.
And so all like, these like surprise prize sort of situations.
Solange at a hair salon.
Yeah, for young artists. Yeah. So that was one of them. I think B.O.B. was there.
No, and then that one, I think it was in the library, and that was the library I actually graduated from high school in.
So when you graduated, did you know what your next step was going to be?
Hell no. I was not even 17 yet. No, I was like about to be 17. Please, I didn't know what I was doing from one day to the next. Like, and even through like high school, I remember like my last years, like just figuring out ways to like make money without getting in trouble because my mom wouldn't let me get like a real job because she wanted me to focus on school, but I needed money. So I would like tutor kids. I would babysit. I would sell like Guess and Timberland counterfeit watches from Canal Street.
Whoa.
This guy named Rico from the village had taught me how to do that.
Wait, where would you sell them?
By my school.
So just in Times Square.
Like a passageway from like, no, not really Times Square. So if you go on 6th Avenue, right? If you go on 44th Street between 43rd and 44th Street, there was there's a building. You could still pass through it. I just saw it the other day when I went to the bar, the New York Bar Association building. You can walk through it. So in the wintertime, we would cut through there.
Oh, it's 6 and a half.
And there were also pay phones.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know if it's... No. That's the going towards 7th Avenue. It's between 6th and
5th. Oh, got it. Sorry. Yeah.
No, I took a picture of it. Yeah. I need you guys to see this.
Yeah.
Hold on. Where's my phone, too? Because remember, I'm a mom now.
Right.
There's this building... So there were also pay phones there. I had a beeper. Yeah, there was this building. They had pay phones there where I would go check in with my mom over every break I had because she had me in like acting and modeling too.
Whoa.
So I would go get these watches. I also used to promote parties from like an early like 15, 16. I was like doing street team.
Whoa.
So I would have my flyers. I would have my watches. There were people I would get to know, and the same people that I would go when, like, at points we had to, like, do something for, like, Hands Across America, and I would have to get sponsors would be the same. I just would get to know everyone. I knew everybody. I knew the people in, like, the bagel and roll shop. I knew, and from a young age, it was like that. But wait, I want to show you a picture.
Yeah, where were these parties that you were promoting?
All over the city.
Really? For teens?
No.
Mm-mm. Like, legit?
Like, there was a club called Demerara's. There was Cafe Lynx, who I was working over there with this guy named Garvin. And I want to say the other gentleman's name was Kwame and Dexter. And Garvin ended up working at Rockefeller.
Whoa.
So when I came there for my internship and was speaking to Bobby Dash that day, Garvin happened to be at Rockefeller working. He was able to co-sign me and say I was a hard worker.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And he knew me from when I was 15, 16.
So you're 15, 16. Are you doing auditions?
I'm in a club. I'm auditioning for stuff, too. That summer that I got my high school diploma, I moved out of my mom's house.
Mm-hmm.
I moved to Harlem.
Oh, with Patricia?
No.
Oh.
That time, no. I moved with my boyfriend.
Whoa.
At the time.
So, you are very independent.
Yeah.
Like, I'm an adult.
Yeah.
I'm starting college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, so you're 15, 16 in the clubs.
Definitely in the clubs.
Did you have trouble with the bouncers?
It was a different time. Yeah. And then I always knew like a lot of older people.
Yeah.
So like Peter Gation like owned like four clubs at that point. It was Limelight.
Yep.
It was Club USA, The Tunnel, and The Palladium.
And you were good with Peter?
Anywhere.
I went to Limelight only once or twice, honestly, because it was a different crowd then too. And it was when I was older.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember like giving out flyers outside of there. I definitely went to Club USA and I was like 16, maybe 16 and a half. And I slid. He had like a slide, a tube slide in there that would go into like a thing of balls.
What, like a Burger King?
Like, yes. But it was at Club USA.
That's wild.
And he had like another room that had all like these peep show things or whatever. Like, it was amazing. Like, I was like, wow, this club is fun.
Yeah.
Like, and then The Tunnel was like hip hop night on Sunday night. But on Saturday night, there were all these other rooms that you could go to. And in the basement, there was like a hip hop room or whatever.
Did you cross paths with Joey I.E.?
I don't know where I initially met Joey I.E., but Joey I.E. was always around too.
Yeah.
Like, as was Big Cap.
Cypher Sounds.
Flex.
Bobby Trends.
Mark Ronson. Oh my God. Mark Ronson used to do the best parties too. Like, he would DJ whole sets through the whole night. He used to do this thing called New Music Cafe and Rebar. I think it was on Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a whole different scene then, honestly.
So people knew you. You were just, you know, Manny?
No.
You were Manuel.
No, I was Emmanuel. Yeah.
Okay.
Manny came. Cameron nicknamed me Manny Fresh.
Whoa.
Yeah. That came later.
So you're moving around the clubs at 15, 16.
Yeah.
How little do you care about your school day?
I was doing that like over the summertime.
Okay.
I remember like, and then when I started college was when it started to kind of affect, but I was always able to, once I moved out of my mom's house too, like do like 4 hours of rest and then get up, go to school, go to work and do what I have to do.
Gotcha.
The club didn't overtake like all of my responsibilities in life. It was just a part of my day.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Even when I got to Rockefeller and I was an intern slash running the girl street team with this girl named Adrian at one point, it was just another nook. It's not like, oh, go to the club to then sleep late and have a hangover the next day and not do anything with my life. It
yeah.
was right. like, go to the club, go have fun with your friends, hand out some flyers, put together guest lists, go back home, whether it was my mom's house over the summertime or when I was back in Harlem or whatever, like go home and then sleep from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. and then get yourself together and Whoa. Do it all over again.
So you had a great work ethic.
Yeah, I always worked really hard, whether it was in school, whether it was tutoring kids. Then like when I went to college, I ended up getting like a real like office job in World Trade Center.
Doing what?
Telemarketing.
What floor?
For Morgan Stanley, Dean Witter at the time. And I was like 17 in 2 days when I applied for it. And I think like I lived with my boyfriend, so I thought I was an adult. But then there was a reality check one day where they were like, before I could even get the job, I had to take a drug test to mm-hmm. work in that company. And in order to do that, you need to be 18. And it was like, wait, hold on. And then I remember the gentleman that had hired me was like, well, go do the drug test. And I was like, I need a guardian's permission. But I figured it out and got it done.
Whoa.
Wait, without your mom's permission?
I don't remember what exactly happened. I was always really resourceful. Maybe I got her to sign it. I don't know. But I figured it out. And I was working at Morgan Stanley, Dean Witter. And I don't remember how long I lasted there because they had a dress code. I didn't really like dress codes, especially after private school.
Yeah.
And on certain days, I definitely had a hard time and was not wearing a pantsuit at 17.
How much of your life is like Catch Me If You Can?
In what sense?
Being very resourceful and
always
being like, yeah.
That's like my motto. Don't tell me what can't be done. Anything is possible. Like, I was supposed to be a doctor. Like, I'm an Indian girl from an Indian father and a French mom. My marriage was supposed to be prearranged.
Mm.
Like, I'm not supposed to be here. Like, I grew up in Section 8.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't finish college.
How much college did you make it through?
I made it through my third year. And it was around the time of the filming of Big Pimping. And I had missed, at the time, there was no online schooling. I had missed one too many math classes of calculus, but I already knew the calculus from high school. And I got into it with the teacher where he was like, you already missed three classes, so I'm about to drop you. The exam is next week. And I was like, please let me take the exam. I'm going to pass it. Please don't drop me. I'm struggling. I'm poor. I'm working. I missed classes because of work. Because at this point, I want to say I was the receptionist at Rockefeller. I was no longer an intern, but I was also Chaka Pilgrim's assistant and Bobby Dash's assistant. And things had started picking up and I had choices at this point. Like if I didn't come to class, it was really because I was doing something for my future and my career. The professor wanted to drop me. I made a deal with him and I said, listen, please just let me come take the exam next week. If I pass it, I get to stay. If I don't, you can drop me at that point because your point is valid. I'm not learning. I'm not here. I'm not present. I said, but I took all of this in high school and I'm really good at math. At the time I was getting like Pell and Tap grants, but I was also getting like a math grant like from Baruch because my SAT score was so high. I passed the class, but it was like a turning point in my life where it was like, what are you going to do? These are choices you have. You can stay in college, possibly don't work hard at Rockefeller and don't get bumped up from receptionist to assistant to eventually the position itself. Or you can stay here and go to college, lose all of that, get your degree, come back to Rockefeller and hope that they have a position.
Right.
Like, and at that point in life, I think I was like maybe 20 or 21, maybe 22. At that point in life, I'm just like, I knew how hard it was for me to get an internship. Do I want to possibly jeopardize what I have going on now? And at that point, also, Rockefeller had become my family. Like, I had Chaka, Dara, Omi, Shari, Carlene. Like, we were a family. So it was like choices, choices, choices. And I want to say the next time I had an exam or whatever, I didn't argue. But I did pass that calculus exam. Mm. So the next week, I was like, see, I told you I already knew this stuff. But even though I won that argument, it was like, do I want to keep on doing this with all the teachers? What am I doing? I can always go back to school. And then I was always a kid that like read a lot on her own, researched what I wanted to. If I don't know something, like I'm going to go find out.
How did you find out about Rockefeller Records in the first place?
So remember I told you my mom had me in acting and modeling.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like a SAG actor kid, right?
Yeah.
And at a certain point, videos started paying in cash. I don't know when, how this happened, but I ended up on a Streets is Watching set.
Whoa.
On a day of a shoot of Streets is Watching. And I met someone named Pain in the Ass. And I got his phone number along with other people on set. But when I was looking for an internship, and as I was calling, I really wanted to go work at Violator or Flavor Unit. I wanted to work for a management company.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't even know that I wanted to work for like a label. Like it was like, no, I want to go work for a management company. I want to help to manage people. It was either music or kids. I love children and I love music.
Mm. And well, a lot of rappers are kids.
No, but at Rockefeller, a lot of the rappers had, like a lot of the people at, on the staff had children.
Mm-hmm.
So there were constantly children at work.
Oh, I'm just saying they act like children. As we'll get into later.
We're all big babies.
Yeah.
Pain in the Ass connected me with someone named Ray Ray. Ray Ray was in radio. I happened to call on the day that was his last day. He was leaving and he was going to, I think, Priority. I could be wrong. Ray Ray transferred me to Bobby Dash. He was like, well, today's my last day, but hold on. Let me transfer you to Bobby. Bobby was like, what do you know how to do? I was like, I know how to type, answer phones. I know how to do a lot. I speak multiple languages. Bobby was like, just come in and meet me. I met him. I went there that day. Like, I got on the train from, like, Cherry Street. Came. The office was on 5th Avenue between 15th and 16th Street. Got there probably within the hour because I really wanted this. Bobby was like, what can you do again? Can you answer phones? I can do this. Just gave him my resume. Garvin happened to be over there in the outside part of his office. Garvin saw me. Garvin was like, she used to do street team. So there goes another thing I can do at the time. Bobby was doing radio promotions. And I want to say I might have started that day or maybe the next day.
Wow.
And then eventually I worked my way up to get the like $15 a week Metro card. Because only a few of us could get that $15 a week Metro card. Then it got bumped up to $40. Then it got bumped up to, I got $100 a week. And then Bobby would also find other things that I could side hustle or whatever and I could get money from. And I was also still doing videos and acting. And I worked at a photography agency across Union Square on Union Square East or whatever. So like I had figured out ways to like supplement my income.
What was the first time meeting Chaka Pilgrim like?
You know what the first time is that I saw her? Actually, I remember this clearly. She was on Streets is Watching. She was running it, and I didn't know what she was doing, but she was on the phone, and she looked like she was, like, really, really busy. And I remember looking at her, because before that, I had been on, like, a lot of movie sets from the time I was a kid. But the only, like, all, like, black or brown crew that I'd ever been around was Spike Lee. And even on music video shoots, a lot of time, like, all the people of power were, like, white. And I saw Chuck, and I'm like, who is this little lady? Who is she? I wonder what she's doing. And then eventually I met her in the office, and she's she was always amazing and, like, hilarious as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But always, like, would fight for what was right. Doesn't care who, what, if something's wrong, like, mm-mm. She was like a mama bear to me.
Yeah.
Like an older sister / mama bear, as was Dara and Omi, like, I would go and bother all of them asking them for work, like Lenny, Hip Hop, F Sharp, Garvin. And like Chaka always had work. And Dara and Omi ran like a fan club at the time called Fan Family. Dara, Omi, and Chaka had a fan club called Fan Family. And there were always letters or something that needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So I was that kid in the office that even when I started working there full time and then I was getting $200 a week. From 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
All in Metro cards.
10 a.m. to 6 p.m. $200 a week that was taxed, by the way.
Oh, my God.
No. But 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., I'm over there at the front desk asking everybody, do you need anything? Do you need anything? Do you need me to check any voicemail? Do you need any lyrics typed up? Like, and Lenny would always, because he would come from the studio, Lenny would write out the lyrics that Jay just recited the night before, rapped the night before, and then I would type them up. But, like, people always had something. Chaka's voicemail always needed to be cleared. And at a certain point, when I got more comfortable and a little more, like, Chaka, this person asked for this. Do you want me to take care of it for you? They need these, like, whatever, glossies of Jay-Z. You want me to send it for you? Like, and it just kept on keeping on.
Yeah. Were you signing as Jay-Z's name?
No. No, but, like, people might have wanted pictures. Yeah, or, like, they might have wanted, like, a package of all the artists at the time. It might have been Jay, Bleak, you know, Diamonds in the Rough at the time.
Yeah.
Rel. And, you know, I would put together the package. And at that time, like, you know, there wasn't, I keep on saying, you know, you don't know. A lot of these kids don't know. You would have to mail out the vinyl. You would have to mail out the press packages. Everything was very hands-on.
What was the first time going into a studio session like?
My first time going into a studio session wasn't actually at Rockefeller that I remember. Like, I was friends with a lot of different artists and creative people. The first time I ever remember seeing anyone actually physically record, and I was like, wow, who knew there were this many pieces to a puzzle when you pop in a cassette tape or a CD or a piece of vinyl. The first time I remember being in the studio was with ODB.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it was the End Please album.
Whoa.
And he, like, was very different with the way he would work. And I remember being, like, inspired, like, wow, this is crazy. Like, there's literally, like, someone over here on the boards. There's literally, like, one person that's coming in to do runs for, like, his beer or his food. There's another person here that's managing him. It was just so interesting to me. And I already knew about, like, the video production side and film production or whatever, because I was on set since I was a kid. But that side of things was like, oh, wow. Like, this is how a song gets recorded. And you do this for everyone. But even when he's finished here, they still have to piece it together. And later on, you have to mix it, which is a mastering film footage. It was just like, whoa. But you just didn't see a lot of women on that side of things. Whereas I felt like on video sets, the casting director a lot of time was a woman, whether it was Millicent, Diane Foster, or there was this other lady named Tracy Moore. But even on movies, it was like Sylvia Faye and a lot of women. In the studio, I didn't really see at that time. Like,
were you there later on when Damon signed ODB, Big Baby Jesus, right?
Yeah. Osiris.
Yeah.
I was.
Whoa. How was that, like, just a funny
was, like,
sort of
full
circle?
Yeah. I told him that it was full circle because I feel like all the different friendships I had in life helped me, like, steer, like, helped me in this journey. And, like, the same way he inspired me, I was able to then be there later on in life and be there as a friend. And I remember him being like, what label do you think I should go to? Like, what do you think I should do, when he was away that time? Because he had, like, a lot of different, like,
offers.
Away time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, in jail and in different institutions or whatever. Damon, in a lot of ways, reminded me of RZA. And when I first came into the business or was trying to get in, RZA was, like, the first genius to me, that he got this group of, like, 12 guys, got them all separate deals, started a clothing line. Like, WooWear was here before Sean John or Rockaware. And to me, Damon had the clothing line. Damon had the movie company. Like, he had all the movies coming out. Damon was, like, is still a visionary.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, sitting with Dirty, Unique, Ehsan, right before he came out, like, what do you think I should do? And I was like, with all the dreams and all the things you want to accomplish, This is the place to be.
While you're an intern, while you're the receptionist, what are some of the most, like, mundane things that you had to do? Did you get coffee for anybody?
I still get coffee for people now. Are you kidding me? If we're on set, I'm still running to get somebody hot chocolate. Yes. Like,
what was one thing that Damon really, like, liked?
One thing that Damon really enforced before Volume 2 came out was I had to answer all 13 lines with Volume 2 Hard Knock Life in store September 20th. I would answer my house phone with that in the middle of the night. And sometimes would argue with me as I was answering the 13 lines and say, you didn't say it. I did say it, Damon. I did. But that was one of his things, and it worked.
Yeah.
It instilled it in everyone that called, whether it was the Chinese food delivery, UPS.
How is
so much passion. It is so passionate and fights so hard.
How was Biggs back then?
Oh my God. Biggs, I'm sure you guys have heard this before. He was like the silent partner. So Biggs was coming around, somebody was getting clipped. So one time he came in and it was just like, it was like a Friday evening. And I was just like, who, what if I'm on the chopping block? Did I come 15 minutes late this morning because the train was late? Like, it was like the anxiety. And like, he called me over to the side or the corner office that Al Branch and Omi shared. And he was on the couch in there. And I was the receptionist. So he calls me. He's like, Emmanuel. And he talked really low. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is my last day. What do I do? Did I forget to say volume 2? And I'm like, no. Like, why don't they just have like chakras or something? Like, does it have to be like this? And he whispered something to me. I was like, excuse me? Because at this point, the voices in my head are and all he wanted was sound scan. He just needed the sound scan that came out every Wednesday, but I think it was like a Friday, so I didn't think that's what he was going to ask me for, but he just wanted the printout.
Did you love everyone on Rockefeller Records at the time? Were you big fans of everyone, all the artists?
When I came to Rockefeller, I loved Christian.
Oh.
I was a backpacker.
Yeah.
So I liked Mos Def, Talib Kweli, RZA, Dead Prez, Killer Priest,
mm-hmm.
Common. Who did I love? Yeah.
Nas?
Yeah. Yeah,
so Nas. So did that, I mean, did
so
you?
So I came there not necessarily for the musical aspect, because to me, at that time, before I really studied Jay-Z, I wasn't, to me, he was like a champagne popper.
Right.
But they had a record label and a management company in one. And it's funny, like, how God works, because I thought I knew what I needed and wanted. And I would have given, like, my left hand to go work for RZA.
Yeah.
But, like, God put me there. And eventually, like, one day I was, like, typing up lyrics. I think it was for Volume 1. It was a song, If I Should Die,
mm-hmm.
Don't Cry.
Mm-hmm.
And Lenny had the lyric. I think it was Lenny. It might have been Hip Hop. Gave me the lyrics, and I had to type it up. And I was, like, reading it, and it was, like, a few lines. I could look it up now, and I was just like, oh, he's kind of deep.
Yeah.
And so, like, the whole, like, thought of what I thought Jay-Z was not, like, what it really was. And then once I got to see the lyrics and just, you know, like, it was just, like, an epiphany at that point. Like, oh.
How do you get involved with the State Property House?
Shaka Pilgrim. Shaka Pilgrim was head of film at that point. She was like head of film, head of video, head of marketing, head of, like, Shaka did everything. And I want to say Shaka was like one of the producers on State Property too. And my job was to make sure all of the guys from State Property got to set every day and got back to the house afterwards and brought what they were supposed to, if there was wardrobe, knew their lines.
Oh, you're the RZA of State Property.
Yeah. Wait, were the State Property guys interested in going to set every day and coming straight home? Like, who put these?
No, not coming straight, but like making sure we got back to the house so that they can then go to the studio, mm-hmm. then come back. And the first few days, I remember, like, Beans was like the leader of the pack, and they came a little late. And it was a Lionsgate production. It's not the same thing as a music video where, oh, well, we don't really need this scene. We needed all the scenes. and I don't know at what point, if it was the second day or the third day, but I remember my job was also to call Sadiq, who was managing Beanie Siegel at the time, or Rola, and like track them and make sure they, and I remember at a certain point, like, because it would be hours, and I'm just still like, are you really on the way now? Because the apartment was in Jersey City on like Steuben Street. You know who actually was living there at one point? Dan.
Oh,
Salamito?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Daniel.
Oh, Logan. Yeah.
Logan.
Yeah.
They had an apartment, right?
Yeah.
It was,
yeah.
It was,
yeah,
in the same building.
Oh, crazy.
So it was a duplex, 4-bedroom apartment in Jersey City. And we were shooting, a lot of State Property was in Paterson and other parts of Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being like, Sadiq, are you guys sure you're on your way? Are you really on your way? But by like the second or third day, like, Shaka was like, you got to go over there. And you just got to stay there. And you got to get them together. And I lived in Lower East Side. Like, I didn't know how to drive then either.
Yeah.
Still don't know how to drive. There was no way to get on, like, on the PATH train. Like, if the car service for me to go, there was no Uber at the time. The car service would have been more. So I ended up having to, like, camp out.
Chaka said it was all beards and Muslim oils.
And I had the fake notion. Like, I had this idea in my head that they all knew each other. And they were all from different parts of Philly. So I come to this house. Beans' brother, Newsy, became my best friend. Mm-hmm. And just figured it out. Like, one day at a time. I want to say the first night I was there, Sadiq might not have been in his room. He went back to Philadelphia. So I was in his room. Another night, I was, like, on a futon mattress in, like, the hallway with Newsy, splitting, like, the floor between him and me. Like, he had one mattress, I did. One night, I remember, like, Beans going to sleep, like, on the balcony. Like, it was just an experience.
Who was the best roommate and who was the worst roommate?
I think that depended on the day, honestly, because we all went through our ins and outs, and I'm sure I had my shit with me or my moody days where I was just like, I don't want to, you know what I mean? Or it's that time of the month and I'm in a house full of dudes. Mm-hmm. Like, Beans was amazing because you know what Beans, people don't know about Beans? He can cook.
Oh, really?
He's a chef. Like, that man knows how to make dishes, ribs, like, he cooks.
Wow.
And, like, he's actually, like, really, like, organized and clean. You would, like, people judge people and think, oh, they're probably a bunch of slobs, and I probably was messier than them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so everybody had their, like, own gifts. Everybody was, like, just, like, everybody had, like, their gifts and, like, good things, and we all pulled together. Not to say that we never got into arguments.
Like, no, but I more meant, like, you know, if somebody was, like, messy or if somebody was, like,
one time
loud.
Somebody brought, like, company. And I was like, we cannot do this. We can't have company. Are you crazy? If everyone brings company, then jewelry disappears. How are you going to figure it out? Then it's a whole problem, and I'm in this house. I don't want to die like this. And it was just like, one of the members had brought company, and I come out from my, like, my bath after, like, a 14-hour day, and I'm in my pajamas. I'm listening to Prince with my boombox, and I'm, like, going to wherever my bed is going to be for this day. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm, like, getting ready to unwind, and it's, like, I would have, like, a couple of hours while Beans would go to, like, the studio and record, and then he might come back at midnight or 2 a.m, and at that point, I might wake up, and then we go over his lines together, and I would, like, pretend to be one of the other members, and then he, and that was our system. I come out, and said person has some company on the couch. And she's not, like, from the movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, what's happening? I thought we all had a rule. Like, what if I start bringing guys or my homegirls over? Like, it's going to become, like, this is going to get a little crazy. Like,
right.
I'm not going to be able to sleep.
Right.
And where does it stop? What if she brings a friend? Like, what's going to happen? This is crazy.
Just spiraling out
but
of control.
I'm like, yes, though, I'm spiraling. Like, by the way, my last name is CUNY Panicker. I panic always. And I don't even know this member really well from, I don't know any of these guys. Like,
right.
I'm getting to know them.
It's like a reality show.
Exactly. It's like
yo,
real
if
world.
If they would have had a camera then, oh my God. So it's just like, hello? Like, this is really happening. So when Beans comes home that night, I'm just like, hello? Knock, knock. Such and such has someone over here. And I just think this is, like, not a good idea because if everyone starts bringing people over and, like, your jewelry's in your room and I just, this just doesn't feel right. Like, and he's like, well, you should talk to him about it. I'm like, no, you're the person in charge. You're, like, the leader of the group. Like, right. He was like, no, you're going to have to talk to him. And I was like, what? And I went to talk. I probably wasn't really diplomatic the next day. I, you know, I wasn't as experienced. I probably was, like, 20-something and I probably sounded bossy and it didn't go well. And then that person ended up getting, like, a hotel room through Lionsgate for, wow, like, the rest of the days.
Wow.
Wait,
the girl or the guy?
Both.
No, the guy, like, who was, like, part of the cast ended up getting, like, yeah. And then I don't know what happens to the girl. I don't even remember what exactly happened
now.
No. And then in the back of my brain, I'm like, oh, well, you said you didn't want to be an assistant for the rest of your life. You didn't want to be the receptionist for the rest of your life. So this is what comes with that. You know, like, Manny, you don't want to be making appointments and answering 13 phone lines. Look, you wanted to be a big dog. This is, like, this is part of it, Manny. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You going to let him have company and maybe your sneakers? Walk out of here. Like, what are you going to do?
What are your first memories about Kevin Hart?
Zayman casted Kevin Hart in Paper Soldiers with Capone. And it's like another moment in time where, like, Chaka, Damon, like, saw, like, the vision in Kevin Hart, this comedian from Philly. like, where did we actually meet Kevin Hart? I feel like it was at like one of those comedy shows downtown on 3rd Street. Not the comedy Boston Comedy Club, but the other one that you go downstairs.
Yeah.
And I feel like Shaka and I had like been like running around the city to different like comedy clubs to like seek out new talent.
Just for different projects?
Yeah, like Damon had like mad projects. He had so many projects going on at one time. It's like the minute you finished one, it was on to Paper Soldiers, State Property 2. But when you really look at it, it's like State Property 1 like was so real. And even though there was a script, it did not feel scripted because of the realness with like the Philly slang, like in the way they were. The same with like Payton Full was like amazing. I just rewatched it for the first time, like since it came out, like the other night. And it's just like, to me, I feel like Damon was like one of the first people to do it like that, where it felt so true to life, like slice of life.
Are there any cameos that really like stick out to you that mean something?
In the movies or in general?
Yeah.
Well, Cam wasn't a cameo. He was like the star, but like for Damon even to know that like or Cam Nori would be amazing. Yeah. Nori was hilarious. Mm-hmm. Gino recently posted something and where he was like that basically like he said that Damon and I were like, just do you like take this and like remix it to whatever you, because that's the way it's going to feel the rawest on camera or whatever. But it's also so you're not looking at the person like, dog, you just memorized that. It feels so phony. I don't believe you. Right. But like Cam hadn't acted in a bunch of stuff, and like Damon knew he would play a great Alpo, and like Cam bodied that.
Yeah.
Like to this day, you can still watch, and it's just like, yo, you killed that. But you're like alongside Mekhi Phifer, and like Wood Harris at the time.
When did you first meet the Diplomats?
I don't even know if I actually met Cam like before they actually signed to Rockefeller, because I had worked on Horse and Carriage and 357. I was a police officer in those videos.
What? Wait, you can be seen in them?
What?
Like
Manny.
Like, wait, you played a police officer in both videos?
Yeah, there was this narrative in those videos with Cam and Mace.
What was your character's name?
No. Like I did, like it's not like a speaking part. Like I could see me like wipe across the street green for like half a second.
Well, I didn't know if you put like thought into your own character.
No, I like really had like a police officer uniform. There were like four or five of us. Millicent had casted it, if I'm not mistaken, and it was one of those jobs. I wasn't working on a movie during those days. Millicent had cash. I feel like Un might have directed those videos.
Uh-huh.
So that was the first time I was around Cam Dipset. And then I officially like met them all when they came to Rockefeller.
Yeah. And how was that when they came to Rockefeller?
Dipset, number one, was like so fly. They had a whole different energy than like Jay-Z from Marcy Projects and the whole Brooklyn vibe. And they were so dope too, just like State Property. It was like Jim wanted to direct. Cam could rap his ass off. Jewels was young, the youngin. And it was just like a whole like burst of energy and like a whole other like chapter of like, I learned so much working with them.
Do you remember the first time you flew in a private jet?
Yeah, the first time I flew on a private jet was right after 9/11. 9/11 happened and we were supposed to be shooting Jay-Z Girls, Girls, Girls that day.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't shoot it. And I got on a private plane with Jay, Damon, Biggs, Freeway. I'm probably forgetting some people. I'm blanking right now. But it was like surreal because at that point I went and I was living with my mom again in Lower East Side. So I went from the private jet to the car service back to our Section 8 apartment.
Wow.
Crazy. In Lower East Side, like where my bedroom window used to be able to see the Twin Towers, the World Trade.
Wow.
And from was no longer there. It just like smelled like death and like smoke and just weird when I came back on my block. And it was a few weeks after Aaliyah passed away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was just a real dark couple of months.
Do you have any memories of Aaliyah?
Yo, Aaliyah was so funny, so sweet, so beautiful, stylish, graceful, and like a jokester as well. Like I used to be trapped in the office like Shari and Carly a lot of times like late. And I was in a cubicle at 825 8th Avenue. At the time, I was Shaka's assistant, and I would help her coordinate, like, her marketing stuff and video and film. So I was in the office late. My cubicle was right outside of Carlene's, like, half of an office that you went into to then go into Damon's office. So Carlene was in there late. I was at my desk late, and I get this call. And sometimes I would still get these, like, receptionist calls, even though we had, like, a receptionist. Like, I would still get these, like, weird calls for, like, Jay-Z bookings or something. And this person called at, like, 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and they sounded like they were either a child or mentally challenged, and they wanted to book Jay-Z. So I'm telling the person to call back during business hours from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and ask for Carlene Ballin and call this number. It was, like, 212-445. And, like, the person is, like, keep on asking me, like, the person kept on asking me to, like, repeat, and then just kept on running me around in circles. And I was like, listen, you just have to call back during business hours and you have to ask for Carlene. And, but do you think Jay-Z is going to be able to do this? And it was just like, and then finally I was like, listen, miss, hello, Rosalia. Like, it was like, Rosalia. Like, and I remember being like, you are hilarious. This is not funny. I'm trying to go home right now. But I remember cracking up, and Carlene was in her office. It was probably like 8 or 8. I was like, you set this up? And I'm over here. I don't want to transfer them because I know Carlene doesn't want the call now. You couldn't just, like, I don't think you. I was able to, like, send the person straight to her voice. And I didn't want to be mean. Because, right. Like, what if this person really wants Jay-Z? And what if they're mentally challenged? Is that the right way to call it now? Mm-hmm. Like, she was dope as hell.
That's
like,
awesome.
Mm-hmm. And she is another, like, symbol or, like, human example of, like, you can be big and famous and still be a kind person. Like, and still be humble, sweet, funny, like.
What do you remember about the girls shoot that you did do?
Oh, my gosh. I just remember being in, like, a weird space because, like, the Twin Towers just got bombed. And half of, like, the cast that was going to be in the girls video was, like, trapped and couldn't even, like, make it to the shoot.
Michael Jackson was... Was he supposed to be there or no?
I don't remember that at all.
But
I want to say that Jay had brought Michael Jackson out for Summer Jam that year earlier in the year during H to the Izzo. Mm-hmm. And I remember being backstage at Summer Jam during that moment. And Chaka had me getting cameos for H to the Izzo backstage at Summer Jam. So I had, like, a camera crew and the boombox with the H to the Izzo CD in it. And my job was to go get, like, the Beyonce. I got, like, a Destiny's Child cameo and Andre 3000. I was going to the different rooms and getting people to do, like, the hook.
Whoa.
When you look at that video. And I don't think I knew that Michael Jackson was coming. We just all knew something was going on. Like, and I remember we didn't have enough wristbands to, like, get backstage at Summer Jam. But, like, Bleak, Omi, myself, and Chaka, like, were in the shuttle van from the hotel to the venue. But we had, like, 10 wristbands for, like, 20 of us. But I knew, like, all the security everywhere from, like, the club days, and the club security would be the venue security at times. And I remember, like, Chaka, myself, I think Eve was there too. I'm not sure who exactly was on that, but we, like, cut them and taped the bands. So I had, like, 3/3 of a band, like, three like pieces of different bands that I taped together. But I was like, if I put the clear tape and I put my sleeve over, and then I put, like, the clothes over that, and I, like, hustle my way in behind, like, Jay and Bleak. Like, I might get stopped, and we're going to have to figure something else out. But, like, we figured it out, and it's like I'm running to get, like, an Andre 3000 is one of my favorite rappers at the time, still is. And I'm getting these cameos. I want to say, like, Redman was there and Method Man. I'm getting the cameos. And then I take a moment to, like, pause and, like, breathe, and it's like Michael Jackson's passing by with, like, 50 Secret Service people, and it's just like, oh, shit. I don't care if I hadn't slept for like 4 days and was only on 2 or 3 hours of sleep. If my phone had just gotten, it's like, oh.
Eric, do you hear that? I don't know, maybe. It's everything falling off the shelves because there is a clearance going on over here at itsthereal.com/shop. All the t-shirts are moving. All of the sweatshirts are moving. All of our rhyme books are going out the door. Everything is falling apart, including the Christmas wrapping on all your presents this holiday season. There is a hole in the wall. Go to itsthereal.com/shop. Get these last few things before they fall out the door. Our apartment is on tilt right now. The block is on fire. Go to itsthereal.com/shop and call 911 because our apartment is on fire.
With deals.
Today.
And now back to Emmanuel. You have any good Memphis Bleek stories?
My first video shoot I went on for Rockefeller was Memphis Bleek Is. And I want to say it had to be $200,000 or $300,000. And it was like Bleek's first video. Wow. And I want to say Darren Grant directed it.
Wow.
Yo, one thing about Bleek is always on time. Like, he was the first artist I had ever worked with. And mind you, like, my first video at Rockefeller.
He's the opposite of Beanie Siegel.
Nah, Beans got better with time. In time. In the beginning, you know, different paths. But Bleek, if his call time was 8 a.m. or 7 a.m., he was there at 7 a.m. And to this day, like, I don't care what it is. Like, a few years ago, I went with Bleek to go get an emergency passport because, like, someone remembered that I knew where to get it at Rockefeller Center. You can get a passport within 24 hours. So Bleek called me. And we lived not too far from each other. Like, at the time, we lived in, he lived some, like, not too far from Hackensack, and that's where I lived. Mm-hmm. And he called me. He was like, yo, E, I heard you know where to get the passport, the rush passport. I'm like, yeah, no, it's, like, right there in Rockefeller Center. But it's, like, this little booth kiosk thing. It's hard to explain. Like, you literally have to take the person there. And he was like, can you come meet me or whatever? And, like, I remember the next day, like, we were supposed to meet at, like, 9 a.m., and he pulled up at, like, 8:55.
Wow.
You know? And Bleek, always on time, works hard, consistent, and just another stand-up person, like, hasn't changed a bit. Like, if TV changed, he changed for the better, what I mean. Like, never switched up. Like, we grew up together pretty much over there. Like,
what's a Rockefeller video that you're, like, especially proud of?
Kanye West, All Falls Down, and Kanye West, Jesus Walks, the Chris Milk version.
Was All Falls Down in Toronto or something?
No,
or
it was in the airport in Cali, but it wasn't Burbank or LAX. It was that other one, like, in Ontario or San Bernardino. Like, it was in some small airport, which was the only one we could get to, like, lock down and actually shoot.
Hmm.
And at the time, like, he wasn't, like, people weren't, like, banging down our door to shoot videos for him.
That's like, Stacey Dash?
Stacey Dash was his girlfriend in it.
Yeah.
And it was in the airport, and it was all from his point of view. The only time you saw him was in the glass of the car in the mirror.
Did
he came up with that concept.
Did Chris Milk direct that one too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Chris Milk was signed to Radical Media. Dave Myers had introduced me to him. Kanye had a wish list of directors that did not write, and then I got a whole other list of directors that were up and coming, and a bunch of reels. I can't remember if I sent it to him on a 3/4 or if they were DVDs or VHS tapes of reels, but I sent him. I shipped a whole bunch of reels. Didn't tell him which ones I liked. So he wouldn't, like...
Yeah, it wouldn't color his vision. Yeah.
And I don't like coloring people's vision. Like, I didn't want to taint anything or whatever. I sent him the whole thing, but I put a post-it on Chris Milk's because he had, like, a Chemical Romance video, I think, at the time. And everything else was commercials, but he had, like, a dope, like, Nintendo commercial. It just was dope. And Ye came to the office or called me a few days later, and he was like, I really like this Chris Milk guy. And Radical's having, like, a meeting that, like, I crashed to introduce Dave and Chris Milk to Kanye. Like, we crashed it at, like, they were at, like, the Viceroy in Santa Monica.
Wow.
And I was good friends with Jen Heath, also Jen Amarine Heath, who worked with Chris Milk and Dave Myers. And it was just like, hey, they're over here. I just want you to meet him. Because my whole thing was, if Kanye and Chris Milk, no matter how dope, how talented Chris Milk could be and how dope Kanye could be, if they didn't vibe and have, like, a certain energy together, if it didn't mix, there's no point in this.
Mm-hmm.
There was no point in going further down the road. But they clicked. It was like a match made in heaven.
Who's somebody that doesn't get enough credit at Rockefeller?
so many people don't get enough credit. Like Bobby Dash, Garvin Stewart, Burt.
Mm. Lenny's best friend.
Lenny, Hop, F Sharp, Farrell. Like, I would have to like literally go back to like those pictures from those days because like we grinded it out. There was another guy, Rob Carosa, Pastogi. There was another Rob Young. Like, I feel that without all of us pulling together, there would not be everything that exists now. Shaka Omi, Dara, Carlene, like those were like women of color that were like killing it and like working and like busting their asses every day. Like, I would go ask them for work and they didn't have to give me work. They didn't have to give me anything to do, like, but they took me under their
wing.
Yep.
I'm a little scattered.
How do you say wing in French?
Elle. Sometimes I think of the things in French and then I have a hard time translating it. You know, another person that didn't get enough credit and used to bark on me at least once every 2 to 3 weeks about different things, but helped me to become a better person, mm-hmm. was Al Branch.
Shout out to Al Branch.
Al Branch was the general manager at Rockefeller Records. And I remember one day I had left the front desk to go get a coat for a mill for the tour, for like the Hard Knock Life tour, was it? And I left the receptionist post with like an intern who then left the post. And I was like, what happens on Friday? And I was like, I went to go get the coat for a mill. And I left, I think the intern's name was Samantha, maybe at the time. And Samantha was there, but apparently Samantha had left the phone. So when 10 o'clock Monday morning came, Al called and I was like, he was like, what happened? And he was like, you're the bus driver and you left the bus. The bus broke down. I was like, sorry. But I really didn't want to be stuck answering phones for the rest of my life. And Chaka needed help.
Yeah.
And that was more exciting at the moment. I don't want to forget anybody because Tone Hooker mm-hmm. was there too.
Yeah.
Tone Hooker came up with the name Rockefeller.
Yeah. Yeah. So at the end of Rockefeller Records, did you have a feeling that things had sort of like drifted apart?
Honestly, like I was one of those people that was always putting my head down and working. You feel certain things, but then you don't really pay attention because there's so much more that needs to be done. And like, you would feel certain things, but like, hey, maybe it's just a rocky week. Maybe there's some internal stuff that I don't know about. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you just keep it moving. It's like, I still have to go reshoot Jesus Walks. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, we thought Michael Houseman was the one at the time. Like, this is who Ye wanted. We got him. And at the time that all this was going on, that I specifically got the call that I was not going to be working at Rockefeller anymore from Uncle Carlton, who was Damon's uncle, and that I was gonna, as of the next week or two, be working for Rock Aware. I was getting ready to do the second version of Jesus Walks, and I was at the Sofitel Hotel. I remember the call, and I was just like, and I remember telling Uncle Carlton, like, Uncle Carlton, I don't want to work in clothing. I like music. I came here to work at a record label. Like, what do you mean? What do you mean?
What did he mean?
Basically, there were a few of us, Shari, Osa, myself, Anthony Drakeford, John Bartleson,
mm-hmm.
that were moved from Rockefeller Records and Rockefeller's overhead into Rock Aware. And Osa, Shari, and I became entertainment marketing managers at Rock Aware. But we were still working with like all of Damon's brands.
Like, and what did that mean your day to day was like?
So when we started working at Rock Aware, we were put into a space together with our desks. And I remember us having to figure out product placement in video, like with different people's like photo shoots. Like, and for me, I remember like Shari and I used to make sure like people had Rock Aware packages or state property. Like if you look at the TI Bring Him Out video, he's wearing a black leather bomber, a Rock Aware one. And that was something, I want to say I had connected with Jason about the video, but I wasn't in the office. And Shari actually put like that order together and picked out clothes. And then we shipped it over and it made it into,
wow.
It was like product placement before product placement. Like,
yeah. How much Rock Aware do you own now?
I still have like a couple of pieces, I feel like, in storage. Mm-hmm. And my mom still wears like a lot of the jackets.
Do you have any S. Dot Carters?
In my mom's house. My mom like thought they were the most comfortable shoe in the world. I got rid of a bunch of stuff because like I didn't want to become a hoarder. But I like recently found like the there was like a Jay-Z phone at one point, like the blue.
Yeah.
And then I found something else. It was like a rock iPod or rock pod, something that Damon had made. He like was definitely like a lot of visionary ideas and ahead of the cusp in the wave.
How long do you stay at Rockaware?
It was over 6 months and under a year. I was once again getting moved. Like Damon was like, okay, Emmanuel, now I'm going to move you. And once again, it's like me and a couple of staff members. And he's like, I'm going to move you to Dame Dash Music Group. But at the point that I'd gotten to Rockaware and I was doing the entertainment marketing manager stuff, I had also figured out other side hustles where I was consulting people and still like helping people with videos and helping to consult a couple of different people that were on the come up. And when he was like, we're moving you again, I was just like, no. I was like, I don't want to be moved. I was like, I need a moment. Because at the time, there were just like a lot of different things happening. And I don't remember what year it was. It might have been 2004 or 2005.
Yeah.
And there was just like a lot of different things happening. And I had just like bought a condo in Jersey like a year or two before, which is why I had figured out other side hustles to get money to be able to pay. I'd gotten this condo and gotten approved for it, but I technically didn't really make enough money after taxes to pay for like the mortgage, the maintenance, and like my PSE&G or Con Ed, as you call it. Like, so when he was like, I'm going to move you again, it was just like, wait a minute. I need a moment. Because I really just needed to get like my thoughts together and figure out what I wanted to do next. And he was like, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to go work with Dame Dash Films? Do you want to work with Armadale? Like, I have an umbrella of things. And I just couldn't. I just got stuck.
So you're freelancing with Bun B and Killer Mike and Kanye West.
Kanye would have different stuff that I would have to do. At the time, Common was signed to him. So one day it was like, hey, can you help organize this party for Common? It was just different things. He had good films, good music films as well. It was just these different things. Like, he might have been directing the Common video. Something went wrong on that set, so now I'm going over there to help him resolve what wasn't right there. It was all these different things. And then like when Kanye actually would have his own videos that were through Rockefeller slash Def Jam, like Diamonds Are Forever, the commissioner there, Margo, would hire me as a freelancer. So I did like Diamonds Are Forever, Touch the Sky, which was in the Grand Canyon. And
That video had to be nuts.
Yeah, that was like 3 days in the Grand Canyon. That's how I met Lupe Fiasco.
Lupe, it was Pam Kanye, Anderson.
Yes. Tracy Ellis Ross, Nia Long. I love Tracy Ellis Ross. Yeah. She's just a ray of sunshine.
Were permits just like ridiculous in the Grand Canyon?
I can't even remember that part, honestly.
It seems just like...
Had you ever been to the Grand Canyon before?
Never in life had I. Like, it was like a dream come true. And I remember like the first day I went with the international marketing lady from Def Jam. I think her name was Cheryl Braji. Yeah. We went to the Grand Canyon. We got lost on the way, but apparently the water truck had gotten lost too and made it to set. So they never filmed the first day.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I don't remember that much. Yeah. Like, so she and I slept at like a Days Inn in the Grand Canyon.
There's not a lot of great like hotel options.
Yeah. We were like, we're not going back over to Vegas. Forget it. Like, because it's scary. Forget it. We'll just stay here and then we'll figure it out in the morning. Because I want to say there wasn't great cell service.
Oh, there's
not,
no.
There weren't, like, navigational things. Like, there were not as many tools. So if you were lost, you were just lost. You were fucked.
Yeah.
You couldn't get a hold of any. So, tant pis in French. Like, too bad.
Yeah.
And there was, like, one or two set phones that you had to, like, it was, like, a big block phone. And you had to go stand on top of the motorhome.
Oh,
like,
my God.
The ladder. Use the phone. So I hope you really need to make this phone call.
Do you know what it was like for Kanye to be at the Grand Canyon? Or like anybody else?
Like how they felt? I feel like for everyone it was like a dream come true. Because with Ye, it's like he got his wish list of women that are in it. We're in the Grand Canyon. We're shooting multiple days. You're getting in a helicopter each day from Vegas to here. So you still have all your amenities. And like at that point, he's popping. Mm-hmm. Ye is a superstar.
Yeah.
So when you think about like the journey from his cameo in H to the Izzo video with Dave Myers, where he has the tattoo.
Mm-hmm. With the hits still be like
with all the things that he just produced or whatever, and like the truth is on there or the reason. Like, no, the truth.
Yeah.
To go from that and All Falls Down, where people were not banging down my door to go write for him. And I'm like, please guys, he's different. Like, just listen to his lyrics and he stands for something else. He's not your typical flossy, I'm rich rapper rapping about designer brands.
Not yet.
Incessantly.
Yeah.
Like, he was still the Louis Vuitton. Yeah, but it's just like, he was just different. He's a breath of fresh air. To go from that, where you're like fighting for the underdog, and then like now we're here at Touch the Sky.
Priority.
Yeah, you got Nia Long, Tracee Ellis Ross, Pamela Anderson Lee. Trailers, Lupe Fiasco, who's like on the rise, but he's from Chicago. Just Blaze.
Mm-hmm. Helicopters.
Water trucks.
Yeah.
Lights. Think about it. Through the Wire was something like that he did on his own. Yeah. Like with Cootie and Chike. Like, here, my friends from Chicago, follow me around. We're going to edit together. And like, dude.
Yeah. So you put 3 years of real hard work in. As a freelance.
Yes. Like, I was on the road more than I was in my house.
So how does Atlantic come to you with the opportunity?
At a certain point, I was, like, the person commissioning everything for their, like, priorities. So it was, like, T.I., the whole Grand Hustle Squad. It was Lupe Fiasco, who was booming. Mm-hmm. I met Lupe, I want to say, after Kick Push when we did Touch the Sky. And I became friends with Jason Salvador and then Chill. And another lady named Yolanda Geralds that was head of the video department at Atlantic did, I want to say, Daydreaming with Jill Scott. Mm-hmm, and I came in right after her.
Wow. And so we're talking, Lior is there, like Warner Music Group.
Yes. Kevin Lyles is there, Warner Music Group. So 2005, 2008, I'm freelancing. They asked me to come work there. Like James Lopez at one point extended an offer to me to possibly become a product manager there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Shout out to James Lopez, who's killing it in Hollywood. Yeah.
Did all of like the TI marketing, and like he was the head of marketing at the time.
Why did you turn it down?
After Rockefeller, I was kind of scared to work for one company again and like nervous to be in one place because it's just like, it felt like, do I ever want to put all my eggs in one basket again? So it was James Lopez, and at another point, Olivia Tortella was trying to bring me on staff. And then the third time was when Sazzle was the head of the department, and that was in around May or June 2008. And he was like, would you consider coming to work here full time? And once again, for whatever reason, God was like, I was like, what would that look like? What would my days be like? Because it was just like after freelancing for 3 years and getting to be so creative and not having to deal with politics, it's like, do you expect me to sit still at my desk every day that I'm not on set from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. because that's going to suck me dry? Like, and like when I first got there, there were like a lot of times, even now, sometimes I function better in like a coffee shop or a tea house or a park bench to figure out solutions than I do like in my office in front of a computer screen.
Yeah.
And I just was like, what would that look like? And we talked about it for a few weeks, and then I started in June 2008 full-time.
Who has been someone who's been there just as long as you have that's meant, like, the world to you to get through all the craziness of the Atlantic Records office?
Like, my rock over there, like, my best friend, like, through the whole thing, Sydney Margetson. Like, he's just a beautiful human being. And has been there through everything and is like a consistent person, like a good soul. And has been very supportive through everything in life.
And he's been there as long as you have, like the entire time.
Longer, yeah.
He's been there longer than me. Deani Harper's been there.
Mm-hmm.
Julie Greenwald, Phil Boddy.
Mm-hmm.
But the person that I'm like the closest to and has been there like every day, every step of the way, that like we're over there when people are doing jail bids.
Yeah.
We're going to visit T.I. in Arkansas together over a weekend. He encouraged me to start exercising. We then did half marathons and marathons together.
And now he keeps doing marathons.
Yes.
That's the real problem.
Like,
that's what
we went from like
we need to talk to Sid about that.
We went from like getting ready to plan like burger convention to like marathons all over the world. Like, he went to run in like Paris, and I went with my mom. I tagged along with my mom. I didn't run in Paris.
How was your French in Paris?
My French is like still bon? Courant. Je parle français couramment. It's still fluent. Yeah.
Okay, you just like proved it.
I know.
Yeah.
I was like, bon.
And I speak it with a French accent. And I actually put Phoenix in a French daycare here. Phoenix is my baby girl.
Can you talk about what Julie Greenwald means as a leader?
Yo, Julie is great. She's a genius. She is empowering, supportive. As like a woman, she shows you that you can be a mother and a wife and a good mother and a wife and also an executive and run things. She is blatantly like honest and raw, but gets it. Like, she's an innovator. But she's also like your mom or sister at times. Like, when my daughter had a stroke, Julie was at my hospital bed the next morning at like 9 a.m. Like, Manny, what's going on? Manny, are you really walking around 2 days after a C-section? Are you crazy? Sit down. Like,
And by the way, people should know that a year later, your daughter's doing quite well.
Yes, my daughter had no deficits. Thank right. you, God.
Yeah.
Apparently, a lot of babies have strokes. Who knew?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, all that to say, I don't even know how to, like, put this all in one, like, because I'm going to start crying. I know no other woman like her. Like, and she works so hard. She isn't afraid. She's fearless. She's not afraid to try new things. Like, a lot of people, like, in the business, it's like they want to do stuff like you did it in 1982 or 3. And it's like, no. But she also gives, like, people chances. Like, at Atlantic, there is a chance that you can go from intern if you work hard to assistant to the actual position. I can't say that for a lot of companies. At Rockefeller, it was like that too. But like, she's also very like compassionate to what we as women go through. Like, she understands it. Like, if you get pregnant while you're at Atlanta, I was pregnant. Like, I was on set, so I was like 9.5 months pregnant. But if I would have been like, Julie, like, I got to cut out with 7 months, my job wouldn't, I didn't have to worry about getting fired. She's like a human being with a heart. And to be so shrewd and amazing on the business level, but still also be a human being, is a feat within itself. Like, you don't really see too many people like her, but also that still have that passion. Like, she also has like more backbone and balls than like a lot of the men that I know. Like, by the way,
yeah. Name them.
Nope, not doing this. Not doing this with you.
Can you talk about a few people who I think mean a lot to you? Marcia St. Hubert.
I love Marcia. Marcia works so hard too. The thing with Marcia that's amazingly dope too, a lot of the times, like, we'll have like the same thoughts or the same like taste in things, so we're not fighting each other. And it's so helpful, like, when people get it like that. But like, Marcia and me would like team up and wait, such and such featured rapper doesn't want to come out the trailer, you go and distract the security guard and I'm going to go in through the back. And it's like, Marsha's right there. We're going to the club or I'm late and the door is shut down, Marsha's coming through the back door. She's not going to leave you out there. Like, what? Like, we've been through a lot together. Like, and Marcia was so supportive, like, when I told her I was pregnant. Like, she was like, she got me like ginger candies. She got me a book called The Wonder Weeks. And it's small little thoughtful gestures, but it helps you along the way. Like,
Shari Bryant.
Shari's my sister. Shari, I'm so proud of Shari. Like, by the way, I'm cheesing right now. I don't even know where to start with Shari. Shari was like a little sister to all of us. And somewhere along the way, things have shifted. Now, she's like my sister, or like sometimes like my big sister, yeah, too. Because, yeah, like, I'll go to her for advice on things like in life or like professional stuff and career. Like, Shari, to me, she's the full package. And she shows you that you don't have to be mean. You don't have to, her and Treece, like, you don't have to be mean. You don't have to lie. You don't have to stab people in the back. Just work hard. Just do what you do. Work hard. Keep on pushing. No matter what. And it will come, whatever God wants you to have.
Yeah.
Shari helped me along my journey with God, like, to get me, like, she's, her and my other friend Amrick helped me start going to church again, because she would go to this church in Harlem, which she still goes to or whatever, and then I started going to it. And, like, that was another chapter in my life, you know, where it shifted a whole lot of things and helped me make bigger decisions, and just, I found, like, more guidance, like, with Shari. It was dope as hell.
Latrice Burnett.
Love Treacy Poole, too. Listen, we were the youngins at Rockefeller, by the way.
Now you're all bosses, by the way.
Treacy's, like, on street team and would work so hard, too. And it was just like, Treacy, what do you want to do? And she wanted to do, like, new media marketing. It wasn't called, like, digital marketing at the time. And there was this guy named John.com.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. John Bartleson.
Yes. And I was like, even then, because I started off interning, I would always, like, I would, like, talk to the kids and just be like, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? Ramsey's, like, Ramsey's ended up in A&R. Like, and with each, you know, whenever I would have time in between, like, organizing stuff and coordinating stuff. And Treece definitely had her vision, and she went to go work with John.com and killed it. She was, like, actually the first, I want to say, out of all of us to leave and go to Atlantic.
Hmm.
And to me, like, that's just, like, such a courageous thing to do.
Yeah.
Because we were kids. You're leaving, like, the only... to go over there and do digital marketing. But what if she wouldn't have?
Yeah.
But even
yeah.
watching her and Shari through the years, it's like, they let, Shari has been at multiple companies, and she doesn't change every 2 or 3 years, but she, like, makes moves.
Yeah.
I was at Rockefeller for like 8 years, and then I've been at Atlantic basically for the next 13 years or whatever. Like, they inspire me on a daily basis.
Okay, we need to talk
They're
about-
They're also beautiful inside and out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to talk about the Young Thug video.
The one that where he didn't show up. Yeah.
He did show up. There was a complication. He did show up. He was physically there. He did not get out of the car to physically get in front of the camera. I was traumatized by that whole thing, because I never, like, I felt like I failed at my job. Like, I've had rappers come to set and say, no, I'm not shooting it. And I still get 15 minutes out of, like, a Lil Wayne.
Right.
Where I'm like, no, just give me 2 passes, please. The music will be playing. I'm gonna have 2 cameras going. I just need you to do it twice.
Yeah.
And then I asked for a third time on set. It had never happened to me that the person was physically there. Like, I managed to get ODB to show up for an hour on a state property thing and do his raps. You know what I mean? It had never happened to me in life where you're here and it just wasn't able to happen. But, like, yeah, when he the first edit, like, I felt like the tone just needed to be worked on. But the people in my department thought it was, like, amazing.
Mm.
What about when I don't know if I can say who this
Raina,
was.
Raina, like, thought it was amazing.
Hmm.
There was a multi-platinum artist who would not get to set because he didn't want to walk on grass.
Who told you that story? I told you that story?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you get that person to walk across
the
grass?
No. I've never walked on grass. Wait, no. Hey, hold on. There were 2 different situations. No, actually. Yeah. Yeah, no, because at one point for one video in Miami did not want to get on a commercial flight and did not want his feet to touch the concrete. And that prepared me for the moment where.
Can we keep the thing in or no?
I think so. All right, like, okay, I think yeah. it's kind of funny. Yeah, I don't know. If that's really like, funny. Yeah, like, because yeah, it's like things that you go through.
Yeah.
As a person in the business where people think you're like sipping pina coladas on set and getting a massage. And it's like, no, I'm trying to figure out how to get here when his call time is 9 a.m. and it's 7 a.m. and he hasn't gotten on the flight. And how I'm going to deliver that news to Terry Hiller and everyone here. Like, what?
Oh.
With that multi-platinum artist that didn't walk on grass, but we were in the middle of the field because the rapper that this multi-platinum rapper was featured on, the number one rapper, the night before decided he wanted to have a stallion in the video. So I had to change the location. No, I'm serious. I'm dead serious.
Yeah.
I literally had to change the location at like 6 p.m. the day before, which is pretty impossible in Miami from like a regular location to a stable with horses.
Did you end up with the horse?
We have the horse. The horse is in the video.
Was it?
The other person, the other rapper who I love so much at the time, didn't walk on grass. So I had production get tarp from Home Depot and wood, and we built what the can walkway. You do? Just figure it out, guys. We had to figure it out. Marsha was there. I know. We were there together.
Who were some of the most important artists that you've worked with over your time at Atlantic Records? Like the artists that have like really pushed you, and in the end, the video really, you know, benefited from their vision.
Or if you even want to extend it out to any artist.
Like in life?
Yeah.
Like I feel like a lot of the different artists that I work with in my life helped me like become who I am today and now. And it started off like maybe working together, but like all of these people like either empowered me or saw something in myself that I wasn't able to see at the time. And it ranges like Beanie Siegel when I was at Rockefeller was there for things and stood up and did things that like my own father would not have or has not in life. Like when I was trying to get my mom a house and I possibly needed someone to co-sign for like the mortgage, like Beanie Siegel Beans was there and that was my brother.
Wow.
And to have that when you don't really have like a father that is like present. My dad was in India, then Amsterdam, then all over the place through life. And my mom and him broke up at a young age and he wasn't like necessarily a deadbeat, but it's different. So to have someone like that be there. So Beans was like really important. And like with Beans, like I learned how to somewhat manage artists because at one point Sadiq was his manager, but then at another point his mom was his manager. So I would team up with his mom, and like at Rockefeller, all of us had our own artists. So I had State Property minus Young Guns, and Shari had Dipset and Young Guns. Like all of us had, so you learned so much, and you learn through trial and error. And like at times, like with Beans, I'm the one that's waking him up to go to the State Property photo shoot or to go to set, and there were a whole lot of lessons there. But then also Beans would be ready, like if there was a personal issue going on, like Beans would be ready to like roll out mm-hmm. and ride up and mm-hmm. take care of it. And by the way, if you don't want that to happen, Manny, like Emmanuel, don't even tell him what's going on. So that was a certain part of my life. With Cam, Dipset, Jim Jones, like I helped Jim when he first was learning how to like direct, and like that taught me another it was a whole other set of experience. Jim would see me helping everybody and be like, Manny, you can't keep doing this for free. These people better be paying you. And I'm over there like Mother Teresa, like, no, I'm just helping. But no, like now I have a mortgage. Like I actually do need money to pay my mortgage and maintenance. And actually one thing is late, like the light bill is late this month or the cable's about to get turned off. And he taught me that. When I started working closely with Kanye, like even when like I no longer worked at Rockefeller, full time, and him actually being there and being like, hey, can you help me with this? And like, just reminding me how smart and diverse I am and creative or whatever. And that was a whole other side of the journey. And even being able to realize like, oh, I believed in him and I had like a small part like in this journey. Like I believe, like I was your friend. I believed in you. You told me what you wanted to do and I helped to execute All Falls Down. At a time when no one was paying attention because everyone was more so paying attention to Jay-Z at the time. He was like the big wig. So Kanye taught me like work hard no matter what you believe in. Like even if no one else can see it, you believe in that and you keep on building on that. Work hard when no one's looking. Work hard consistently. Keep pushing, pushing, pushing. You might bust the door down. And with that situation I did, and the same people that I called 6 months before for All Falls Down were definitely filling up my voicemail after All Falls Down came out, and then Jesus Walks. It's like, oh, can I please write on a, and it's like, oh, well, no, Chris Milk's going to do the next 7 videos, you know? And then from that, I went to Hype Williams. So with that, Ye taught me, was a part of that journey or whatever. At a certain point, I was working with Killer Mike, David Banner, Bun B. It was a whole other portion of the journey. And with David Banner, it was more like on a management side of things where I was consulting. And I learned a lot there. Leaving there, then it was like T.I., Jason Jeter, and Grand Hustle. It felt like State Property all over again, but in Atlanta. So I learned so much through that journey. And then I eventually, you know, I was best friends with Jason Jeter for Lant, and then eventually T.I., and he then became my brother. And him and I would say, like, Beanie Siegel, and there are other couple of people in my life, Sydney Margetson, like, that were, like, strong, amazing, like, men and, like, good people that helped me, like, straighten out my path in life with what I was choosing to be romantically involved with. You know, like, where it's just, like, would my best friend do that? Like, so make better decisions. There are people that are morally sound, you know? Like, I feel like everything is just like a piece along the way. It's like all parts of the journey and parts of the lessons in life.
Did you go to Chaka's birthday that Jay and Damon were at together?
Yes. How meaningful was that? Like, rooftop in Brooklyn at a hotel. That night, to me, I felt like that was the best birthday present, like, Chaka could have gotten. It was, like, such a special night to see them laughing together. It felt like the old days for a few moments. And just to see all of us there from, like, different eras of Rockefeller in the same place. Yeah, Dara was there. Like, that was a special night. I think I still had the pictures in that BlackBerry of the time. I feel like I posted one of the pictures.
Did you?
It was a special moment just to see them laughing. I was almost scared to take it because I was just like, I don't want to interrupt. But then I saw someone else doing it. So I was like, hey, I'm going to sneak it. They might still like curse me out for this. But oh, well, it's worth the curse out. But I don't even think Damon or Jay even felt that.
I'm sure you see some people regularly. But when we had our Rockefeller thing last year and we were all upstairs in the green room and you saw Biggs or Lenny or Hop or Young Guns or Freeway or Jimmy,
Wayno,
Chaco. Like, what did that mean to you?
For me, every time I see anyone, like I saw Freeway last week at Meek Mill's. There are certain people in life that I feel like you might not see them for 6 months or a year, but you could just still pick up where you left off. And anytime I see, especially like the ones that are like doing really great, and you know what we all came from. Like, this was a struggle, you know, and it was like a lot of nights of no sleep. There's still nights of no sleep. Like, I get more rest now than I did then, but there were like a lot of birthdays that were missed, a lot of Christmases, a lot of Thanksgivings. It was like a Mother's Day that I definitely was on a shoot, you know, like Rock the Mic and all those like State Property videos that there were like three that we did with Sanaa Hamri. They were all like on a like either Christmas or Thanksgiving weekend. And I remember, like, Latrice got on the train to Philadelphia. And Latrice worked in, like, digital, like, but we would all pull together. And I feel like Damon came and he saw, like, Latrice was over there helping. Like, we just would figure it out. There was another girl named Christina. Like, we were just out there, like, working.
Because you realized that this was something bigger than any one of you guys individually?
For me, I work off of passion. And like, I don't really think of, like, why am I doing this? It's just like, no, this is what needs to get done. And, like, when I bonded with Beans on the State Property movie and Oskino, Sparks, Chris and Neef, Freeway came later. Chris and Neef were, like, probably 16 at the time. You form these bonds with these people. They become your brothers and your family. So you're going to do whatever you have to so that everyone's winning and eating. So I don't think I, like, sat there and thought, like, hey, like, why do I need to go do this? Is it about my career? Or that? Like, it was just like, nah, this is just what we got to do. Yeah. We got to shoot it before Christmas because is happening. Or it's like, we need these pieces to go up. Or if we don't shoot it by this date, it won't make it to 106 and Park. It was just always something to keep pushing. And it's like still what pushes me to this day. If I don't fight for this setup, this video might not be as great as it, you know what I mean? Like, and it's just these like bonds that you build with people where it's not just like a paycheck. It's like, you really have a chance to make a difference in this artist's life, but also in all the lives that this message that this artist is giving changes. Like when you think about somebody like a Kehlani, like the piece of art that she puts out that addresses certain situations might touch 10 little girls in Oakland that are considering suicide or that are depressed, or five little girls in Lower East. Like, it's just you just go.
If you think back now to that little girl from a single parent house in the Section 8 area on the Lower East Side, went to a French school that she was just, you know, buried under a lot of weight at, skipped a grade. You ever think back and consider how far she's come and all the work that she's made happen in New York just to make this cross-country move that she's about to make?
Mm-mm. No, I don't really think about that. Like, yesterday I was, like, thinking about the fact that, like, I came from that. I guess I sort of did. Like, I was a Section 8 baby. We were on WIC or whatever. And now my baby doesn't live in Section 8. Like, I was thinking about that, like, this morning. I was like, we don't live on Section 8, so I broke the cycle. But I don't really sit and think too much about that because I feel like there's so much more that needs to be done. I have so much more to do. And I don't know if that's, like, backwards or not. But, like, sometimes I do think about the fact, like, I didn't have money for food, like, as a teenager at times. And that was, like, part of, like, me going out there and hustling and figuring out, like, for $3, even at Rockefeller for, like, $1.99, we're busting down a Blimpy sandwich and figuring out how to make it work. And I think that's, like, important for a lot of us to share because people think it's, like, peaches and cream all along the way. And even when I go to, like I've talked at different schools in, like, the Bronx or whatever, and these kids don't realize that. Like, there were a lot of times we were, like, even at Rockefeller, when it was popping, like, there were times that you literally are sitting there, like, hey, let's just get the three piece from Popeyes. You can get this piece. I'll get that one. You take the biscuit and you figure it out. But I don't really sit, not too much. This morning, it was just like, it was a different day. And it's because we're in the process of moving. I'm like, wow, we're going to have a skylight? Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking about it now, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you know, we talk about it for an hour and a half, and it probably, like, you know, brings up a lot of things that you haven't thought about in a long time.
Yeah. Because you, like, just push it back. Yeah. And then you feel like, for me, it's like, oh, there's so much more to do. Like, wait, we got to move on Saturday. That you don't really sit and think.
Yeah.
Until you see somebody that might have taken the other path or road.
Sure.
And it's just like, wow, that could have been my life. Where there was, like, a ceiling.
Cause now you have a skylight. Like,
yeah. I was like, I have no ceilings right now. Yeah. Like, don't believe in ceilings. But I'm sure, like, do you guys feel like that with your journey? Like, you're living your dreams now.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah. I think about it. Here and there, I think, you know, we've done a lot in 11 years and even going further, you know, beyond that. But it's I think it's important sometimes to look at your reflection and be like, wow, like, there's a real list of, you know, a real long list of accomplishments, and they happen.
Yeah, I think I'm sort of like the way that you are, where it's just like, there's so much left to do.
It feels boasty, right, though? Like, but it also feels to me like a little conceited to be like, ew, look at me.
It's your life. Yeah. It's your life.
Oh, no.
Congratulations on the new gig. Congratulations on everything that you did here in New York. And we're looking forward to everything that's on the way.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real Jeff. If people want to find out more about us, I'm Eric, you're Jeff. Together, we are It's the Real. If people want to find out more about this podcast, it's called A Waste of Time with It's the Real. We also have Two Jews and Two Black Jews Review the Movies, our film podcast with The Locks. Jeff, if people want to find out more about what's going on with us in our world, in this universe, where can they go?
I don't know. Talk to a friend.
You can always go to itsthereal.com, itsthereal.com. You can also find all of our old episodes and our new ones on iTunes and Spotify and all of the streaming services. Search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real, or you can just search for It's the Real, much easier, much shorter. You can also find us on soundcloud.com/awasteoftime or Two Jews, Two Black Dudes. We are also on all social media, including Twitter at It's the Real, Facebook at It's the Real, and Instagram at It's the Real. Jeff, this is one of our favorite parts of the 12 Days of Podcast. We have put the word out and said, hey, if you guys want to be shouted out, now is the time to put your names in. And guess what?
a lot of people have responded. And I just, before you get to the whole list, Jeff, I want to personally shout our friend Ron Funches, the great stand-up comedian who has an upcoming special on Comedy Central in 2 weeks. It's called Giggle Fit. It's January 4th at 11 p.m. on Comedy Central. Make sure you fuck with that. Tell your friends and family about it. Ron Funches, Comedy Central, Giggle Fit on January 4th.
And I also want to shout out somebody who didn't hit us up on Twitter, but yeah. I want to shout out Maria Garcia out there in Kansas City.
Big shout out to Maria,
who is killing it, as always. So I just want to shout her out. She's the best.
I also want to shout out someone, Jeff.
Uh-oh.
Our friend John Sparks, who masters not only our shit, but also Action Bronsons and French Montanas and Harry Frauds and Currencies. He is a master mixer, a master masterer, and a great dude. Shout out and all our love to John Sparks down there in New Jersey.
Also, he's 6 foot, like, six.
Really?
Yeah, did you know that?
I did not know that.
There you go.
All right.
All right, let's start this off with Dan Rice. Dan Rice over at Billboard, one of our favorite writers, one of our favorite people. Dan Rice asked if he could get shouted out. Absolutely. Go Cuse. Also want to shout out Bob Fuentes, Multimedia Bob. I also want to shout out Dominic Myers, who said, I'll take one. And also Meezy Boulevard, me of the Textually Active Podcast. I also want to shout out our boy, BA from Bama.
Yeah.
Ink and Ammo, Amir. I also want to shout out DJ Yanni, who we've known forever.
Chi-Town.
Chi-Town and from Greece. I also want to shout out Sammy Monet, for real, for real.
Yeah.
Let's also shout out OKNYC from the Upper West Side, our neighbor.
Yeah, yeah.
Shout out to Black Pharaoh Kron Says. Let's also shout out Walasia, who said, why not? I also want to shout out OK Ray, who said, hey, guys. Shout out to Free Cannon XX and Alex Spies and Elijah Horton, who actually did not ask for a shout out, but he is looking for a Smiles and South Star Orlando episode that, you know, we would do down there.
You know, not out of the question. Check back with us tomorrow.
Yeah. I also want to shout out Jan Wen out in the Netherlands and Lawrence R. My jokes are funny. Yep. I also want to shout out Andrew Byrne.
Yeah.
Out in LA, who used to work for us at the Sideshow Network and has gone on to even better things without us. Let's also go with Greg YRN because he has AirPods. I want to shout out the kid Tyshawn, who says, help me promo my song so I can't stop driving this Ford Escape. I don't know what that means. I think it means either his song is called So I Can't Stop Driving This Ford Escape, or maybe it's like the movie Speed, and he's saying, help me promote my song so I can't stop driving this Ford Escape. I don't know, but shouts to the kid Tyshawn. I hope whatever you're asking for, I hope it works out. I also want to shout out Keith _ A, Plantain, Poppy, that's Fargo Music, NY,
yeah.
And also Eritrean Hendrix. Shout out to you.
As always, Jeff, not for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
See you guys tomorrow.